Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark, March 18th. We are officially, if my math is correct, 1 month away from the end of the regular season and into playoff mode. And the Canucks are stumbling a little bit. But as always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you doing tonight, Clay?
I'm good, Parker. Thank you. Welcome back. Welcome back to the city. Thank you. Hope you had a good rest. And yes, our last game of the season is on April the 18th. Today is March the 18th. So yes, 1 month away, and they have 14 games to figure things out as opposed to 4 games. I know we're going to talk about it, but more importantly, the pleasantries. I'm glad you're back. Good trip overall.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back in my purple space here, better than a random kitchen.
People like that setup, by the way. I think there's a lot of
microphone. I'm glad it went as well as it did. I was really concerned not having, you know, the studio mic and everything set up, but no, it's nice to be back. Unfortunately, I happened to take a flight home it ended up taking off at like 6:30, no, probably 7 p.m. on a Canucks game night. So I missed almost the entirety of that Colorado game. And then as I am on the plane, we land and we're about to, it's at that point where like half the people are standing up and like waiting to get their bags. And I'm not one of those people. Like, I'll just get up when it gets to me.
Yeah. Why stand up? Yeah,
exactly. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, oh, people are probably getting service back and I have the game recorded at home. I'm going to put my headphones on. I get to about here. And I hear someone say, the Canucks lost again, didn't they? And I'm just, and so I get him on and I'm like, oh, I hope that guy was just making an assumption.
Right. Right.
So I get off the plane. I go, you know, through customs, the whole thing, get on the train, 2 stops to my car at the value lot. And then I get in my car, plug my car into CarPlay and immediately watch the highlights in the parking lot. 1-0, 2-0. It's 3-0 Canucks. Like, oh, maybe the guy was wrong. But in the back of my mind, I know. I'm like, no, they're gonna blow this lead. And of course, Colorado scored 3 and then they went in overtime. So at least the Canucks got a point out of it. So it wasn't too bad. And I didn't have to suffer through it for the most part.
Yeah.
But that was a tough way to get home.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, you didn't even watch the game. I watched the game. Oh, no, I didn't watch the game because I was at church. So I didn't watch the game either. So we're going to have to kind of familiarize ourselves with Nathan MacKinnon's very good player. I know that.
Yeah, his 73 assists I'm seeing on the score sheet here probably lead to that.
73?
That's what it says in the overtime goal. It was his 73rd assist.
Oh, actually, yeah, that's pretty good. He's a good player.
It's not bad.
Okay. So it was, that guy was right. Did anyone else groan audibly on the plane or?
It was a bit of frustration. I don't know. I feel like, you know, people are flying home during a game. We're on a Flair Airlines flight. There's no Wi-Fi on those, you know, people might be recording the game or, you know, maybe chill a little bit on the spoilers. But the Canucks end up 0-3 against Colorado this season. So hopefully we don't run into them in the playoffs. Or maybe we're due for 4 straight wins. So only 2 games for us to go back on, 2 losses, one of which obviously against Colorado, where the Canucks blew a 3-goal lead, which is unfortunate, but still, you know, took a point. And then of course the game, was on Saturday against the Capitals, where again, they had a lead pretty early. They score essentially in the first minute 11 in, and blew that one too. So we got 2 games to break down. We've got not a lot of news on the Canucks front, but we'll go over some of it. So we might have some good time for the people in this slower month of March.
Yeah, no, that's good. And before, so perspective is key. You and I both, when we text, when we chat before we press go live, we're still overall in a good mood. The fact that we're actually talking about, hey man, how are you covering the playoffs? Are you doing shows? Are you doing videos? Like, that's cool that you and I are talking about that. So that's cool. That's a good thing. And they're not going to fall any deeper than past second. They're either going to finish first or second in the division. We know that for sure. There's no way LA and Vegas are going to make up 15 points on them. So we're not worried about that either. But yeah, we do want them playing well. And it's perspective. Do you say they've lost the last 2, or do you say they have points out of the five of their last six? Or do you say they've lost eight of their last 13? So you see what I mean? You can kind of paint it however you want to, but I think our job is to talk about facts, talk about these two games, talk about a Hronek contract offer, talk about some new lines, and then we'll see how they react tomorrow when they play the Buffalo Sabres, another desperate team.
Yeah, that's one. You know, Buffalo's been pretty decent, and of course we'll preview this a little bit more in depth.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you're like, hey, that should be a get right game. But again, it is, like you mentioned, it is a team that they're 4 points out of it, essentially. They are grinding for every point. It's a team that I don't think they've made the playoffs since 2011. I think I heard, because where I was, we have NHL Center Ice down there. So it is nonstop hockey on the TV all the time. So we're watching random Sabres games at like 12:30 on a Sunday, which is fantastic, by the way. But yeah, like, you know, you're in that sort of space, and you know, you hear that stuff on the broadcast where, you know, yeah, haven't been in the playoffs in essentially 13 years. They're going to, you know, in theory, take to the Canucks. You know, for a slow month, we somehow have four games to preview now that I look at the schedule here. What? Because the Canucks play on Monday as well.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. The one game, day 1, 3, 5, and 7 of our, basically of our week.
Yep. Yeah. Canucks play every other day, and we get a bunch of them.
So as we go into this Colorado game, what's really weird, Parker, is you know how this month has started off so slow, i.e. 2 days between games. So there's more time to stew over these losses too.
It makes it tougher. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of sticks on your mind. You want to be playing, you know, in times of a bit of a slump, and you know, the Canucks did just win four in a row coming into these two, but I think we still feel the games before that a little bit, right? Like that loss to LA, the loss to Pittsburgh, Seattle, Colorado, even back to the 10-7 game against the Wild, even though it was a month ago now, it was only what, like 12 games ago. And, you know, there was that slump and then four straight wins and then, you know, two straight losses against, to be frank, two pretty good teams, right? Colorado's a really good team. The Capitals are a bit of middle of the pack, but a team that can win on any given night. But it's more the way the Canucks have played, and having these big rests in between them gives Canucks fans, including ourselves, a lot of time to really stew in those losses, which is unfortunate. So let's take it back to Wednesday. Again, on my flight home, so all I watched was the highlights, but the Canucks start this one off pretty hot. 24 seconds in, the Canucks get their first goal. It's just a play back to the point where Ian Cole is waiting. He throws at the net. JT Miller gets a piece of it, and it gets through. Canucks are up 1-0, 24 seconds into that game.
Yep. Great start. Canucks have been doing that recently, and you think they'd have better success given their early season record of holding on to leads. But yeah, 24 seconds in, amazing. And of course, it's JT Miller. He's probably, we talked about this last week. Him, Hughes, and Demko, probably the three MVPs of our team this year.
And then, so I'm at the airport. I've got 19% battery with a 3-hour flight ahead of me. And I'm thinking, how can I preserve battery as much as I can? So I download like the Halford and Brough for the day and Donnie and Dolly for the day.
Oh, smart.
And then I put my phone in airplane mode, so it uses no battery, essentially. Listen to Halford and Brough, and they're talking about, when is Ilya Mikheyev going to score a goal next? And I think Halford said it will be tonight. And he was right, because 2.5 minutes later, Canucks lead a rush from their own zone. JT Miller takes it around the net, throws it in front for Mikheyev, who just battles his way to the front, ends up against a D-man, I believe, or against a forward. I think it was Nichushkin was the last man back, and just shovels it past. Just like that. I mean, 2.5 minutes in, Canucks have a 2-0 lead.
Yeah, no. What was more surprising, the fact that we're up 2.5 minutes in, or the fact that Mikheyev scored for the first time since we started our show 3 years ago? So
it does feel like that, eh? Now I look at this. He somehow has 11 goals this year. That feels high.
Exactly. I was. It's so funny, Parker. I was saying, looking at the exact same thing. And when you see 11, like maybe he finishes with 15, and that's not great, but it's not horrible. But yeah, it feels like he hasn't scored forever.
Yeah, if you had asked me completely blind, like, hey, how many goals does Ilya Mikheyev have this year? I would have guessed 7. So 11 is not good, but it's not terrible.
Yeah, not terrible. So
first period, pretty low event. Shots 6-6 apiece. Go to the second period. Canucks make it 3-0 again, just about 2 minutes into the period, or 4 minutes into the period, I should say. And again, this time it's Connor Garland going around the net. And what it does is it pulls everybody down low. I have a screenshot here that I can't show, but there's four Avalanche players below the hash marks and one guy at the second hash mark on the faceoff circle. So everyone's low, played back to the point for Zadorov, who just fires it through everybody, finds a lane. Canucks are up 3-0 in this game. This should be over. Casey DeSmith gets his first point of the season on this goal. Zadorov has been impressing me lately, though.
Yeah, he's been good. And you know what's interesting, Parker? You mentioned Mikheyev's goal, Zadorov's goal. And I think even the first goal of the game started behind the net. Rick Tocchet said in his post game that one of the things they scouted was if they could get behind the Avalanche net, exactly what you just pointed out, that they had a tendency to all come down, leave the points open. And look, two of those three goals were from the point, like Cole tipped by Miller and then Zadorov straight in. So good work of scouting there. Too bad didn't work for the rest of the game.
No, and it's one of those backbreakers that we talk about, right? The late goals. And this one's fluky. The Avs throw it into the zone with like 8 seconds left. It hits a stanchion and comes out into the faceoff circle. So they keep possession. They throw it across and it just gets thrown in front. And Colorado scores with 1.8 seconds to go in the second period. It's Rantanen. And that's one of those ones that you take into the room. Instead of a 3-goal lead, you have a 2-goal lead. And now the momentum's shifting the other way. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah, some teams you could say, okay, we always talk about you hate to give up a goal in the first minute or the last minute of a period. But there's some teams where you could say, okay, 3-1 coming out for the third. We should still be able to handle this. But this is one of the most powerful, you know, potent teams in the entire league, and they showed it in the third period.
Yeah, they're a top heavy team, but that top line is dangerous. And they score about 3 minutes into the third period. This one is McKinnon, who gets his 40 something of the year, which is just ridiculous. They're on a 5-on-3 power play, which is just something you can't do against that team. It's just a one timer, Carter McKinnon. To make it 3-2.
Yep.
And then a few minutes later, you have Ross Colton, who is not a guy who's going to be scoring a lot of goals. This one's just a bit of a mess. You know, gets thrown in front, puck bounces behind the net, played back in front. And then from his knees, Ross Colton chops it on the backhand at the net. Casey DeSmith, credit to him, makes the save. His pads just happen to be in the net.
Yeah. One inch. They saw enough. They saw a sliver of white space between the puck that was kind of up. It's kind of hard to explain, but in his pads, but it's still, they saw a gap between the pads and the goal line, unfortunately.
Yeah. No doubter. Honestly, that's in. Canucks take a penalty right at the end of the third period, which carries over into overtime. And this Colorado team in overtime, they're going to find a way. If they're on the power play, it's a McKinnon one timer. This one just banks in, or my camera went, I'll try to fix that. this one just banks in, and gets through that's the way it ends.
Yeah. I'll let you figure that out. It hits Juleson. So it was McKinnon winds up, it hits Juleson and then it flutters up and it hits Nichushkin in his visor on his head. That's what you call using your head. And he gets, and, you know, it's so deflating because of so many things. The Canucks lead this game 3-0 against a very good team. They give up the 3-2 lead. Then they take the penalty with whatever, 10, 20 seconds left. And then it only takes Colorado 30 seconds to score. So we don't even get a chance. At least, I don't know if this would be more maddening if we kill the penalty and then they still beat us either later in the overtime or the shootout. But I just hate those overtimes, Parker, where we don't even get a chance to touch the puck.
Yeah. I mean, look, honestly, one shot, no T. The big thing for me is the third period, right? The shots are 17-3 for Colorado in the third period.
Yeah.
Right. That's inexcusable. That's like, there's no explanation for that. You know, no matter how good of a team that is on the other side, you know, Casey DeSmith played all right. You know, the goals he let in are, you know, that Rantanen goal, which was a pass in front. It's a great play. That's a tough one to save. And then of course that Ross Colton goal that he got as much of it as he could, but he's in the net. you know, team in front of him just sort of hung him out to dry.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to save this for the topics, the hot topics, whatever, but it's not his fault. And I know we're going to get to Washington game. It wasn't his fault, but there's almost a stigma that I feel that some fans, I can see it on X too, that they're saying, if he doesn't play, the Canucks don't, when Demko doesn't play, the Canucks don't win. And obviously, intuitively, they have a lesser chance of winning because that's the whole point of being a backup. But it's not dismissed fault, but he's starting to pile up these losses. He had that one win against Anaheim, but yeah, I don't know. I just want him. He sounds like a good guy. Played well before the All-Star breaks or before Christmas. But we need him. We need him. We absolutely need him.
Here's the thing that's crazy to me. In this game, The Canucks get outshot 34-21.
Yeah.
Rick Tocchet says, after the Demko injury, hey, you know, the boys love Casey DeSmith. They're going to block shots for him, essentially. The Canucks blocked 22 shots. Colorado blocked 2 in this game. Now, if you do some math, 34 shots and 22 blocked is 56 shot attempts, not including the ones that go wide. The Canucks had 21 plus 2, 23. What? That is more than double if you include the blocked shots. That's crazy. I haven't looked at Natural Stat Trick. I'm sure it will, you know, the Corsi will not look good. And I'll take a quick look at that here. Corsi was 60-25 for shot attempts. For scoring chances, that's a 5-on-5. Sorry. All situations, 73-30. Scoring chances, 37-16. High danger chances, 21-9. I don't think I've ever seen 21 high danger chances, let alone 11 in a period. But that is egregious.
Wow. So, wait, just so I'm clear, those were all for Colorado, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, just making sure before I look like an idiot. So, okay, then that actually leads credence to the fact that DeSmith played well. That's good. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Expected goals were 4.57 to 1.84. So DeSmith technically saved, you know, half a goal above expected.
Yeah.
And the Canucks scored 1.2 above expected.
Yep. 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 Wow. Okay. So you look, and actually Mike makes a really good point here. We're lucky to get a point. So do you look at that, Parker, as, man, the Canucks were lucky to get a point looking at all the stats now, or do you still look at it as, oh, they lost a point by giving up a 3-0 lead?
Well, what happened is, I mean, look, in the first period, they got outplayed handily, but they came up with a 2-0 lead. And at those in those games, you know, again, a point's nice in a game that you didn't deserve anything. And the funny thing is, they were the better team in the second period per expected goals, but then got absolutely shelled in the third. you look at that and you say, well, like, you just hang on to the lead, like play better defense. That's literally the difference in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
So let's go to Saturday.
Actually, before Canucks, we do that, Parker, if I can jump in there real quick, I just want to honor Coach Rob, who gifted 5 memberships just as we were starting. So thank you, Coach Rob. I won't screw up to see who they went to, but thank you, Coach Rob, for generosity and for being part of the show. Awesome.
Thank you. Okay, Saturday. Canucks, again, get on the board quick against the Capitals. A minute 11 in. It's Brock Besser. Really nice play from Hughes. Just takes it down the wing. Sort of burns his man. Takes it on the right point. Takes it down the left wing. Finds some space. Throws it on net. Besser's got his stick on the ice. Tips it through. So the Canucks have a 1-0 lead. Hughes, 64th assist of the season. Brock Besser's 36th goal, which is fantastic. And then, again, shot 6-6 in the first period, same as the Colorado game. It's a repeat of history. Second period this time is when the Canucks fall apart, allowing 14 shots to their own 5. And they allow 2 goals in a span of 2 minutes. Tom Wilson scores his 16th, which is what happened on this one. Just a rebound. DeSmith lets out a big rebound. Really nice play in front by Miro Shnichenko. Gets it over to Wilson on the backhand, who has a wide open net. Just have to have better defense there, frankly. You got to clear out the front of your net.
Is this the post-icing goal, Parker?
This was the post-icing
goal. Why don't you talk about that? Because I know you were so mad you actually tweeted about it.
Yeah. Yeah. This was egregious on the linesman's part. But there's really no excuse in the Canucks part either.
Right.
This puck gets shot down the ice. It is clearly a candidate for icing. And Phil DiGiuseppe and the Washington defenseman are about side by side going to this puck. However, the puck is coming along the boards and is only ever going to get to the corner. Phil DiGiuseppe has the inside track going to this puck. And the way the rule works is when one player gets to the faceoff dot, whichever player is going to win the race at that point is how the icing is determined. So technically, the Washington player was a half stride ahead, got to the faceoff dot first. However, with the puck being in the corner, the Washington guy was out to the outside. Technically, Phil DiGiuseppe had a closer line to the puck, even though he wasn't the first to the faceoff dot.
Right.
The referee blows the, or the linesman blows the whistle for icing, which is by the letter of the rule book, incorrect, because it is not who gets to the faceoff dot first. It is who would get to the puck first, which was obviously Phil DiGiuseppe in this case. Like, it's not even up for debate. Like, he was going to get to that puck first. And to add insult to injury, the second the linesman blows the whistle, Phil DiGiuseppe deadpans. And the linesman skates up to him and starts talking to him like, hey, yeah, like, you know, I know that was, you know, kind of a close one. Sorry. And Phil DiGiuseppe says nothing. Like, very clearly, the linesman's like trying to dig himself out here.
Yes.
And technically, if you make an incorrect icing call, protocol is to put the faceoff at center. They did not do that, even though the linesman pretty much admitted that he was wrong and apologized to Rick Tocchet at the intermission.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They put the faceoff in the Canucks zone. They win the draw. They score. Now, the Canucks need to be more resilient. Absolutely. But that play should never have happened.
Right. And then, yeah, so I agree with everything you said. And both can be true. That could, it was a bad call, but it still doesn't mean that it should automatically result in a goal against.
Right.
Bluger
loses. It's an icing. It's not, they happen.
It's not a penalty shot.
Times a game.
Yes. Bluger loses a faceoff. Cole does a horrendous clear. I don't know what he was doing. And then, yeah, as you explained, the nice pass. And then they were just kind of converged on the crease. It's unfortunate, but people were bloody mad.
Yeah. It's frustrating, right? Like, look, we can, you know, even Zhao says it in the chat, like, the honestly, the Canucks are fragile mentally. That was a case of them being fragile mentally. Like, they looked fragile and they were frazzled and they let, you know, the Capitals score and they let them score again shortly after.
Yeah.
Those are things that can't happen, right? Things are going to go against you. But that play should never have happened to begin with. So it's sort of it's a chicken and the egg sort of scenario almost, right? Like, that they should never have been in that spot, but they put themselves in the spot to get scored on at the same time.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Agreed and agreed. Huh. Frustrating.
So they score again, of course, a minute and 55 seconds later. And it's Ovechkin. And again, this is just bad defense. It's 5-on-5, but the Canucks look like they're shorthanded. And they just make a tight passing play, every pass below the hash marks, essentially. They get it through to Ovechkin. Someone's sprawling on the goal line. It's Hronek. He's sprawling on the goal line. Casey DeSmith is literally facing the net by the time this puck goes in. Pius Suter is on his face on the side of the net. Elias Pettersson is on one knee in the faceoff circle. Quinn Hughes is standing on the other side of the crease with a stick in the air. I don't know what's going on here. This is an absolute disaster.
It is. And before Ovechkin puts it in, I actually pay attention to Pius Suter. I keep saying that. Pius Suter, who actually tracked him, then left him because I think he thought the Canucks were safe. Yes, he tracked him and left him. Oh, yeah, that was a disaster. What's Hronek doing there?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if he makes the save, that's sweet. But
hard,
like,
to make the save when you're in the net already. Yeah, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, like, Casey DeSmith facing the net is a bit of an indictment. That's tough. Usually things don't go well there. But yeah, just a mess.
Just, and all five Canucks players were inside, like the,
they're all, yeah, there.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. That's a little frustrating.
So two straight losses for the Canucks. They came on in the third period, 11-4, the shots. They just couldn't get anything going, which is unfortunate. I'm curious analytically. Let me take a look here. Expected goals, Canuck. It was about 50-50, honestly, anybody's game. High danger chances, 11-11. Scoring chances, 24-22 in favor of the Caps. Corsi, 70-45 in favor of the Canucks, but they're not getting shots through. Yeah. You've noticed that lately, I'm sure. Like,
yes.
You know, not the Colorado game, because only two shots got blocked, but they also didn't take many shots. But in this game, shots were even, but the Capitals doubled the Canucks block shots, 20-9. And that makes a big difference, right? You know, that's instead of, you know, it's 70-45, the shot attempts, right? Instead of being 60-40 shot attempts, technically the Capitals had more shots than the Canucks in this game.
So the Canucks outshot attempted the Capitals 70-45.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's what, yeah, Rick Tocchet was talking about that today. He said, it's maddening. That's not his word. That's mine. The fact that they had 48 shots by math, either blocked or missing the net.
Yeah. They that's just need good. To, they need to do better. They need to execute. That's really the big difference. Yeah. But yeah, so the Canucks lose two straight after winning four straight. And if we look ahead, you know, they've got four games this week against teams they can beat. Buffalo, a team they should beat, frankly, but they are desperate, yeah, trying to get into the playoffs. The Habs, a team that they should beat, you know, being well outside of the playoff picture. They've won 25 games this year. The Flames, a team they should beat, a team that's, yeah, not going to be in the playoff picture. And then the Kings, a pretty even opponent who they lost once to and beat once. But technically, look, the Canucks are 13 points ahead of them. They should beat them too. So we'll see. We'll see how they turn this around this week.
Yeah, I will say one thing about the Capitals. Before I do that, Carol, thank you. Following in Coach Rod's footsteps, another five memberships. Well, Parker, that's using my math, that's 10 memberships tonight. That's awesome. So that's, thank you, Carol. Math. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. So speaking of good math, the Capitals beat Calgary tonight. So this is a team, you know how they started the season so good and no one knew how? And then, because not like Ovechkin was doing anything, then they went through a pretty bad spell where I actually thought they were going to sell off at the trade deadline. And lo and behold, they've now passed Detroit, Islanders, and someone else. And they are now the wild card team and they're breathing down Philly's neck now too. It's crazy. Washington's playing very well.
They are. They are
Charlie Lindgren.
You know, it was like, yeah, oh, we're just gonna watch Washington, or we're just gonna watch Ovechkin on a bad team break the record, right?
Yes.
But they have fought their way back into a playoff spot. They have a minus 27 goal differential, and they're in the wild card spot with a game in hand on the Flyers. If they win their next game, they are third in the division.
That's and nuts. We'll
play the Hurricanes in the first round.
That is nuts.
It's crazy.
And you know what's funny you say about that minus 27? Well, I guess it intuitively makes sense. They don't have a positive goal differential in any of the three periods. And that makes sense if you're minus 27. That's nuts. Minus 27, and yet they are eight games over hockey 500, right? 33 wins, 25 outright losses.
There's two teams in a playoff spot with negative goal differentials right now. And that's the Flyers at minus 6 and the Capitals at minus 27. Like, if you're the Islanders, you're frustrated. Like, you're at a minus 20 and you're just outside. The Penguins are a minus 2 and they're now, yep, 6 points back. Like how does that work, right? It's got to be frustrating.
That does not make any sense.
No.
But we're not used to that. Here we are at our plus 54, you know. Of course, cuz, yeah, the Canucks are so good. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Should we preview?
Sure. Let's do it. So, okay, we did pretty bad on our predictions.
Yeah, a little too optimistic. I think I said 2-0. Did you say 1-0-1 or did you say 2-0?
I went 1-0-1 and then I tried to be copycat you, and then so now I'm 2-0 as well.
Should have gone the opposite. Yeah. Four games this week, every other day, starting with the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow. Now keep in mind, Buffalo Sabres, second night of a back-to-back, as they beat the Kraken pretty badly tonight, 6-2.
Wow.
Three goals in the first period, and then they just sort of ran away with it in the second and third. And honestly, looking at analytically, Kraken played okay. 34 yep. shots to 30 Buffalo blocked a lot more shots, so Seattle outshot them, outchanced them. And third period, you know, they were down 5-2 and they really outshot the Sabres, but Sabres held on to win it. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen playing really well, but the Canucks probably don't have to deal with him. He faced 34 shots tonight. They're going to have Erik Komari tomorrow, who has not been good, frankly. Good. 9 games this year, 864 save percentage, at his 1-7 record. So look, Buffalo.
Komari's played 9 games?
He has played in 9 games. Yeah.
And Ogopogo has played all the rest, or no? Or do they have a third goalie?
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has played in 44. So they must have a third goalie that's played.
Yeah.
Doing some math in my head. They've got to have a third. Devin Levi. Didn't he play a bit? Okay. Yeah, he's played in 20 games. But I don't think he's on the roster right now.
Okay.
So the Canucks should get Erik Komari tomorrow. And for the Sabres, that's not great news. Like I mentioned, he's got an 864 this season and 892 in his career. Especially against a high powered offense like the Canucks are, the Canucks should be firing pucks home tomorrow. We'll have that as a win on the schedule, ideally.
So Gurkamal, Jack, and Japan are all saying, and even Derek.
Devin Levi is the backup. Well, Erik Komari was the backup tonight. So yeah. I guess they'll make some shuffling. That's probably good for Buffalo. Let me pull up Levi's stats again. I lost them here.
That's good.
He's got an 891 this season.
Okay.
330 goals against average, 9 wins, 7 losses, and 2 OTLs in 20 appearances, 19 starts. I can see why they're doing that, right? Putting Levi in because he seems to be their second best goalie. And like you mentioned, they are sniffing a playoff spot just about 4 points out.
Yeah, they do have the most games played, though, of all those teams chasing. So And Justin, thank you, Justin, for the donation. Heard Devin Levi might start. So if we keep making lineup errors, maybe Justin will keep donating more. No, in all seriousness, thank you, Justin. And by the way, does everyone know that Justin met Petey today, by the way? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is cool.
That's awesome.
So Canucks at home against the Sabres, 2 days of rest against a team coming off a back-to-back. That is a scheduled win all day.
Win.
So we'll see. Win. Thursday, Habs come to town after facing the Oilers tomorrow. So they're on, you know, their normal rest. They've lost 2 straight. They lost to Boston in OT on Thursday. They got beat pretty bad by the Flames on Saturday, though. And they've got the Oilers tomorrow. So they'll be in tough in that one. They are pretty low on the standings. They have the 4th worst goal differential in the NHL at minus 50, 25, 31, and 11 for 61 points. So that should be, again, a team the Canucks should beat 7.5 times out of 10.
Yes. And this, you know, I don't get as annoyed with Montreal Canadiens fans as I do Toronto Maple Leafs fans. Do you, Parker?
No, that's not even close. Yeah.
Having said that, I still want the Canucks to win just as badly. I'm not predicting a loss. I just have a feeling this one should be the easiest, I think, of the 4 games. And to me, that's why it's going to be the toughest. So I'm not saying the Canucks are going to lose, but I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk as much as it should be.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. Saturday. This is an interesting one. Flames come to town.
Yep.
Very short travel. The Flames lost to the Capitals tonight, 5-2, as you mentioned.
Okay. Yeah.
They don't play again until that game on Saturday.
What?
So they've got 4 full days of rest, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They can probably fly in Saturday morning if they want to. They are on a full rest. Well, the Canucks will have 1 night of rest as well. But this is a team that is going to be well-rested and, frankly, a team that's on the outside, but has a distant chance, right? I hope they have a chance because I'd love to see Vegas fall out. The Athletic has them at a 1% chance. So maybe I'm being a little optimistic. a team the Canucks should beat, but they are on 4 full days of rest.
Could this be the game that Lindholm finally breaks out in Parker?
I hope so. Man, I hope so. I need to see more out of that guy.
I think we all do. He's back on PP1 today. We can get to that, but yes, maybe that helps. I don't know.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then
that was the most, like, that was the most resigned "that's good" I've ever heard you do.
I'm a bit defeated. I need him to do more. And then on Monday, so a week from today, it's a 6 p.m. start against the Kings.
Good. I can't. That means I can go to it and we can still do Canucks After Dark. That's a good thing.
I just can't explain how we have a 6 p.m. game against the Kings when if it's in LA, it'd be at 7:30. But hey, a nice early game against LA on the 25th. LA has been, you know, doing okay. They're at 79 points. They're basically 500 in their last 10. Mm-hmm. They're on an every 2-day schedule. They play Tuesday, Wednesday this week. Then they have a couple days off till Saturday. Then they play Monday at 6 p.m. in Vancouver. Again, really all four of these games the Canucks should win, to be frank.
I agree.
However, it's not how it really works. So my prediction is going to be an optimistic 3-1.
I like that. I like that. I'm going to go 2-1-1.
Okay. Yeah. I'd be okay with that. Yeah, it wouldn't be fantastic.
Yeah.
So the Canucks right now, 8 points ahead of the Oilers. Oilers have 3 games in hand and they've been hot.
Oh.
The Athletic currently has the Canucks at a 65% chance of winning the division. So still above 50, still good.
Mm-hmm.
With the Oilers at 34%, the Kings at 1%. That's a pipe dream for them. Vegas is currently got their way up to a 93% chance of making the playoffs, which is unfortunate in my opinion. And most of the playoff races are decided in the West at the very least. It's going to be Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, Nashville, Vancouver, Edmonton, LA, Vegas, most likely in those orders as well.
Yeah.
The East, though, is a toss-up, especially what the Capitals have been doing. Detroit, in the last couple of weeks, has fallen from over 70% chance of making it. They have fallen off as the Lightning have shot up. So in the Atlantic, it is going to be Florida, Boston, Toronto, and Tampa. And in the Metro, it's going to be the Rangers. It's going to be Carolina. And then the Islanders at 59% for the Athletic. The Flyers at 56, the Capitals at 44, Detroit at 26, Pittsburgh at 13. So two of those five teams will make it in. So the West, not very interesting right now, but the East is getting a little bit spicy.
Detroit, what a fall from grace. They're actually battling, and then they've gone 2-8. They're fighting each other in practice.
Yeah. That gritty killed them, eh? That's the narrative we should start. Jake Walman's gritty, how that started the Detroit Red Wings collapse.
Yeah. By the way, I can't remember now. Were you in town when the Canucks played Winnipeg, beat them 5-0 in Zadorov? I know we talked about it last week when Zadorov
I was out of town for that one.
Okay. But we did talk about, Zadorov's great. Yeah. Great performance. And he said he didn't know what the gritty is. He thinks it's stupid. Yeah. It was pretty funny.
That was great.
Oh, Matt. So great point, though. Yeah, the 8 teams in the West do seem locked in. And as we've talked many times before, I know I've said to anyone who will listen that you can't just count on the Canucks winning the first spot in the West, because the other 3, Dallas, Colorado, and Winnipeg, are all 1 point behind the Canucks. So the Canucks could finish either 1 or 2 in the Western Conference. So you don't even know who they're going to play, which wild card, 1 or 2. And we don't even know who's going to be in which wild card spot. So there's still too early to predict, a month away. Yeah.
The Athletic has it right now.
As
Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg, Vancouver in the West.
Wow.
So the Canucks could technically, they think the most likely scenario is the Canucks win the Pacific.
Yeah.
Are technically the 4 seed in the West. So they would get wild card 1.
Correct.
In that case, which would likely be the Nashville Predators.
Right now, yes. It seems like it.
It would be, they have Nashville at 99 points. They have LA at 99 points and they have Vegas at 98 points projected.
Those are
a toss up, right? If the Canucks win the Pacific, it will be one of those three teams essentially.
Yeah, so that's what I mean is maybe we're waiting until the final week maybe it'll be more clear cut at the top. Maybe the Canucks are not challenging the Central Division winner. Maybe they are. I don't know. It's so hard to say. But that's my point is we know the Canucks are going to finish in the top two in the Pacific. It's either going to be them or Edmonton, but we have no clue if they're going to finish one or two in the conference by rank, not by total points, but by rank. And that will dictate which wildcard team they get.
Right. And now keep in mind, I said Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg, Vancouver. I didn't say the point projections.
Right.
Dallas 110, Colorado 110, Winnipeg 109, Vancouver 109, Edmonton 107. So it could go any which way.
Yeah.
At the top of the West. And that's really the interesting race at this point.
I hear you. Okay, let's play a game. And we'll do 5 more minutes, then we'll get to the people. Does that sound good?
Sure.
Yeah, real quick. I say the line and you tell me how much you like it out of 10. So these are the new lines from today. You ready?
Okay.
Here we go. Miller, Besser, Suter. Out of 10, what do you like about that?
6.8.
Okay. PD, Hoglander, Garland.
7.4.
Can't wait to hear this ranking. Lindholm between Mikheyev and Lafferty.
5.5.
Oh, not bad. You at least give him passing grade. And then Bluger, Amon, Podkolzin.
It's like an 8.5 as a fourth line.
So there's your all four lines changed at practice today.
I think they need it. I think they need a spark. Yeah. I hate that we're in this situation, you know, a month out, 14 games, I think you said.
Yeah.
From the playoffs and we're mixing things up. It should be, hey, we're grooving. We got everyone together. Keep in mind, the Canucks are first place in the Western Conference right now. And we're doing this you know, really things are going fairly well, but, you know, Tockett's not being complacent. He's saying, hey, you know, we are better than how we have been. I think the really big thing is fixing the power play. I think that is the most important thing the Canucks can do right now. Because we always talk about, and I think I bring this up sometimes that, you get to the playoffs, your power play is less important because there's typically less penalties called. That's not true in the first round though. The first round typically sees more penalties called in the regular season. And then it weans out a little bit every round after that. but the first round of the playoffs is the most penalty heavy time of the season. Maybe other than preseason, I guess, when they're like putting new rules in and being really hard on them. So the Canucks, they have a month. They have a month to figure it out. And they need to get that power play clicking at 22-24% going into the playoffs. Otherwise, you run into a Colorado in the playoffs and each of you get 4 power plays in a game, you're losing that game unless your power play is working.
Yep. And that recent game showed us that. Okay. I hear you. And that'll not officially, it counts. It'll help all their point totals a little bit. And a guy like Lindholm, that's the perfect remedy for whatever is ailing him. All right. Last topic. And then we'll go to the people. Rumored that Filip Hronek was offered a contract. And they didn't say years, but they said 52 to 54 million. So let's presume it's 53 divided by 8. So 53 million divided by 8 is 6.6 million a year. Because it's definitely not going to be 53 divided by 7 because they're not paying them 7.75 unless you think they are. Where do you think this goes? Rumor or conventional wisdom says, Elliot Friedman said, if they do 7.5, they get it done. That's still under what Hughes makes both by percentage and by actual cap dollar money. What do you think this goes, Parker?
This one's tough. Hronek is such a tough one to nail down.
Yeah.
Because of Quinn Hughes, frankly.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Filip Hronek has 45 points in 68 games. It's a career high by far, right? His previous career high was 38 in 60 games. Actually, no, last year, I guess he had 39 in 64 games with the 4 Canucks games that he played. So, you know, a big jump. From his previous career high. And he's young, right? He'll be turning 27 in November. So he's a 26-year-old. An 8-year contract would take him from his 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34 year-old seasons. So his entire career, essentially. Mm-hmm. But how much of it is him, right? How much play is he driving compared to how much is he picking up points from being on a pair with Quinn Hughes? And I know a lot of the talk has been, you know, hey, Filip Hronek, if he wants to, he can go elsewhere if he thinks that he's a number one, right?
Right.
If he wants to show that he's a number one, then he cannot play next to Quinn Hughes. But if he's okay being a number two and being a supporting role on that top pair, then he's in the right spot. So it's really tough for me to tell how much play he drives, because it feels like defensively he's a little bit iffy.
Yeah, he messes up a lot.
Yeah, sorry. Especially two-on-ones. I don't think he plays very well. But he's got a hell of a shot, and he's pretty dangerous offensively, and he's a pretty good player. So, yeah, Friedman says it'll take 7.5. The rumor that you heard is about, what, 6.6 that you saw?
Yeah, initial, which Japan correctly said that Hirono's camp rejected, yeah.
Right, so 6.6 was rejected, so he's probably going to want 7+.
Yeah.
I mean,
Joshua Griffith's saying 7.35 times 7.
Yeah, the tough thing for the Canucks is Hronek has a lot of leverage here, right? Yeah. They traded for this guy last year, and they traded essentially Bo Horvat for him, right?
Yep.
With you know, some extra stuff on the side, of course, but you know, that's a pretty big piece that they've brought in, and it's been a steady defensive partner for Quinn Hughes, right?
Yes.
Even if Filip Hronek is a $6 million player, he has turned Quinn Hughes into a better player. Because he's not playing next to Luke Shen, to be frank. Or, that's the big difference for me, is I think management should go to Quinn Hughes and say, hey, is this the guy you want to be your partner for the next 7 years? And if he says yes, then you write the check. But if Quinn Hughes says, I think we can find someone different that would fill the same role for cheaper, then I think you go that route. But I think, honestly, I think Quinn Hughes should hold the cards here.
Interesting. I like that. I like that take. We all know that it's very hard to develop your, I mean, it's very hard to trade for. It's very rare that you trade for a team's willing to give up a right shot defenseman, a top pairing.
Yeah.
Although Detroit did have Sider. So I get that. I get that. And then usually you have to draft and develop your own guys. And who's our best right guy in the system is Tom Vilander, but they're even projecting him as a middle pairing. So you can see how valuable a top pairing right shot guy is. Yeah. This is going to be a very fascinating story to watch. I don't think it's gonna be like Petey like distraction Parker, but with that Petey contract out of the way now, this is the next biggest story in terms of Canucks contracts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I think is interesting is, and I saw it mentioned by David here, arbitration, right? Technically, the Canucks own his rights. He's an RFA this year, but will be a UFA next year. His QO is only 5.28, which the Canucks will obviously put up. But he would have that arbitration option. So that'd be really interesting to see if it goes that route, because usually it's not very, you know, things don't go very well in arbitration. but it's an option the Canucks have. So technically they're not really on the clock yet. But for Filip Hronek, right? I mean, he's made, you know, $15 million in his career at the end of this contract. And he's probably looking this as, you know, this is his big payday. This is going to be a 7 or 8 year deal through his entire prime. And he's probably wants, you know, $55, $60 million if he can get it.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Good. Yep. That'll be a big story to watch for sure. But, I'm fine with seeing how he does in the playoffs first. We got 10 minutes. Should we go to the peeps?
Let's do it.
All right.
Edmund got in. Ready?
Yeah. Edmund, this is good. Parker Clay, if Lindholm continues to play the way he is, Vancouver won't even bother giving him an extension and not even $5 million. Yeah, he's in a contract year. He's not doing a lot.
No, I mean, his value drops by the day. Because, I mean, look, he was on a... You look at his past performance, right? Like, oh, he was playing with Goudreau, and he's putting up 100 points, right?
Yeah.
Or 82 points, whatever it was. Oh, he plays with Toffoli, he puts up 64 points.
Yeah.
Then he plays in Calgary this year. Doesn't really have great line mates, puts up 32 points in 49 games. And it's like, oh, he's falling off, but he doesn't have, you know, the stars with him to play with. And then he comes here where he has Elias Pettersson to play with, or Besser and Miller, or whoever he ends up with. Mm-hmm. He doesn't produce, right? Yeah. And it seems that, you know, are we A, in a fall off, or B, is he still adjusting? Those right. are the two big questions. And if you're going to extend this guy who made $4.85 million this year, he probably came into this season after the last couple of years, been like, oh, I'm going to make $7-8 million bucks a year. But now, if you're the Canucks, like, that feels silly to offer the guy $6 million a year. Like, he's not playing to that caliber. He's not showing that he can be a 2C, which is what he should be on this team. And then that allows you to put, you know, Pettersson and Miller together, or Pettersson and Lindholm together, and get a little bit crazy and stack the top side of the lineup. It hasn't shown up yet. However,
yep.
look, he's UFA. If you're the Canucks, though, you are in no hurry to make any moves mm-hmm. here to extend mm-hmm. him, unless he's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm not playing well. I'll take my same salary, right? Like $5 million bucks a year. I think yeah. you do that for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But he's probably still wanting a big pay raise, and he's probably hoping the playoffs come by and he can earn that pay raise then.
You're right. 29 years old. His next contract is going to be his last chance to earn big. I keep forgetting that he earns only 4.8, because that's actually consoling a little bit for this year, but that's Mikheyev type numbers. They're doing the exact same thing. Yeah. But yeah, that's not worth 6.5 or 7. Peter says this: thoughts on fans being critical of PD tends to disappear at times, but like Parker said before, he's the type of guy that probably is going to turn up in the playoffs. You know, Peter, Parker, to answer Peter's point, I was saying in one of my streams that I'm going to wait to see how he performs in the playoffs. Like, yeah, some people are worried that he's disappeared in some of these big games, but I think these games aren't that big. Like, they're important games in the regular season, but you make your money, not literally, but you earn your reputation as a big time player in the playoffs. So I'm willing to give him until then to form my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, I've been on this train all year long.
Yeah.
It's starting to derail a little bit, to be honest.
Mm. Mm. Talk to me.
And I don't know if if the Canucks have won the last two games and Pettersson did nothing, I'm probably back on where I normally am.
Sure.
But it just hasn't been feeling like he's been that dangerous threat that can create so much offense and drive play. And I know it's there, right? And I know he has it in him, and I know you stick him in the playoffs, and I bet that's there. That's what I'm clinging on to, because he is so determined and so skilled that I think you put him into that playoff environment and I think he becomes a different player. And I don't know if that is me being hopeful or if that is just who he's going to be. So am I concerned on his play right now? I am, in the sense that I don't know if he's going to pick it up during the regular season. However, when we get to the playoffs, I think he's going to be a weapon. And I'm going to stand by that until game three. And hopefully he's picked it up by then.
Yeah. 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 I'm with you. Dogwood says, do we miss Kuzmenko? Will Lindholm start getting scratched? I don't think Lindholm will get scratched because of, he's not putting up points, but Tockett still does love the way he wins faceoffs. Have you guys noticed the Canucks have not been losing faceoffs since Lindholm's been here? Basically, like, it's not perfect. He still plays well defensively. And he still checks hard. He just has no offensive ability right now.
Look, that's worst case, you're putting him on the fourth line instead of him on, right? He's not getting scratched.
Yeah, I agree.
Unless
it's
really to send a message. Do we miss Kuzmenko yet? No, not at this point.
What do you think about that? So Rick Tockett, he did a 14-minute media thing today, and he hinted how much the Canucks miss Joshua, and he says he's still going to be out a little while longer. That's basically what he said. So now we're coming on 4 or 5 weeks since he broke his hands in that Chicago game, that Gordie Howe hat trick game. Obviously you want him back. We've seen how they haven't had any semblance of a third line since he's been gone. But if it means that he's going to be effective in the playoffs, where we need his aggressiveness, his nastiness, I'm okay. You know, it's not ideal, but what are we doing here now? We want to make sure he's healthy. We don't want to rush him back, but it is a little bit disconcerting.
Yeah. It's one thing if they were pushing for a playoff spot. I think Josh was in the lineup right now.
Yeah.
The Canucks are, you know, 1 point in or 1 point back. However, where they're at right now, I think they're probably saying, hey, you know, we need you to be fully healthy for the playoffs. if we need to give you an extra week here or there, you know, especially with the schedule, like they just played two games last week, right? It's, you know, you get to that scenario like, oh, hey, do we put them in for the Washington game? And you get two more days off if we don't, right? Yeah. This week it's a little different. They're playing every other day. I'm a little concerned, but I'm more concerned on what does that mean for Demko's timeline more than I'm concerned for what it means for Joshua's timeline. Because it feels like we've had a lot of injuries over the last couple of years that have been said, oh, it's X timeline and it's X plus 2 weeks, it feels like.
That's a great point. Japan forces that. Demko ain't coming back to the last couple of games. Edmund was asking, do you think he comes back by the 28th, which is what we were originally hoping for at the end of this month? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That scares me a little bit.
Looking at the schedule, the Canucks don't play any more back-to-backs, right? No, they play one. April 2nd, April 3rd.
That's it?
Yeah, that's their last and only and last back-to-back this season. I'm looking at this and saying, can we keep Demko out as long as possible? Honestly.
Wow.
Looking at the schedule, and I'm thinking, you know, Sabres, Habs, like he's not coming back this week, obviously. You know, Stars on the 28th was the thought, and there's a 2-day rest going into that. But the Canucks have another 2 days off before their next game. Well, you can just give to Smith the Stars then, and then give him another 2 days to recover until the 31st.
Yep, I agree.
My thought is, I'm looking at the last 8 games of the season where there's a back-to-back, the 2nd and 3rd, as 2 of those 8 games, the 6th, 8th, 10th, 13th, 16th, 18th. I say I want DeSmith to play April 2nd against Vegas. I want Demko to come back April 3rd on the second night of a back-to-back against Arizona. Give him a fairly easy team to settle back into. And then I want Demko to play 5 or 6 of those last 7 games. So if he plays that Coyotes games, 4 or 5 of the next 6 to get in that playoff groove. And then we roll into the playoffs. Okay. That would be my ideal timeline.
And your April 3rd projected start for Demko is not far off what the Canucks said. It would be basically 4 weeks instead of the 2 to 3 that they said. So actually, it wasn't even the Canucks that said 2 to 3. It was Farhan Lalji that said 2 to 3. And then the Canucks said week to week because I think they're learning and they don't want to put a number in front of the number of weeks.
Right.
Week to week could literally mean 2 weeks. It could literally mean 8 weeks because that's what week to week means.
But Dolly all said less than a month.
Yeah, he did.
Which he seemed pretty confident with. Said it was the knee, and then the Moj was like, it's probably an MCL or whatever, which is 4 weeks or so, 2 to 4. So maybe he's ready early, but I'm looking at this and I'm saying, look, the Canucks are, DeSmith has been fine, frankly.
Yep.
You know, they can't win in front of him for some reason, but that's not his fault. And I think, you know, Demko's start, how many games has Demko started this year?
50? No.
He's played in 49 games.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, hey, like he only like 55 is the number we want him to play, right? From the start of the season.
Yep. 55.
So if he comes back for that game on the 3rd and plays,
that's true. There's your 55.
6 of those 7 games down the season, that's 55. And I think that's probably a good place for him to be.
Zest, and then we agree.
Gets him in that groove, right? Like and I see Japan mentioning like goalies need to be playing a lot to get in the groove. That's what I'm saying. Give him 6 of the last 7 games of the season. That'll get him in a groove for the playoffs.
Yeah, and Zest, good point. You can't blame DeSmith when we only score 1 goal. Not sure if you were here earlier, Zest. We were talking about how DeSmith has been playing well. You know, you want the guys to win in front of him for his sake, for the team's sake, obviously. But yeah, they haven't been providing him with a lot of goal scoring support. That's for sure.
Even though they love the guy and they should be getting in front of all these shots for him, says Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. This isn't a question, but it was inspired by what Mike said. Hoglander is the best value in the NHL. So obviously he has benefited by spending basically all of last year in Abbotsford and then coming up and being awesome this year. A similar track with Podkolzin a year behind him?
I hope so. Honestly, I've liked Podkolzin's game since he's come up. Like Nils Höglander, the fact that we have him next year at 1.1 as well, like there's a big piece of your window, right? For next year. And Podkolzin can be a piece of that too, right? He's obviously, he'll get an extension this offseason. His contract expires this year. at 925. He's not going to get much of a raise. He might get 1.1, 1.2.
Yeah, he'll get the same thing. Yeah. Exactly.
And then, yeah, maybe you can turn that into something, right? If he can take that big step next year. I mean, he doesn't have any points this year in six games, but yeah. I think he's been playing well and fitting that fourth line role well. Is Hoglander the best value in the NHL? No, it's probably Connor Bedard. Yeah. Or any other ELC player for the most part. Right. Like very good ones. But yeah, Hoglander's been fantastic.
Yep. Yep. I agree. Okay. Anything else?
I'm okay.
Okay. That was a good show. We got, so we only had two games to talk about, but we have four every single back to, alternating nights now for the next 7 days. It's good.
Yep. And we'll be back right here 10 p.m. next Monday. If you missed any part of this show, you can rewind back to the beginning here on YouTube or on your favorite podcast platform. If you missed any part, like I said, it'll be up on your favorite podcast platform in 10 to 15 minutes or so. Clay, any parting words this Monday night?
We keep saying it. It's 14 games left, not four games left. We got a couple guys still out, key guys in Demko and Joshua. Let's just get guys like PD, Lindholm, Mikheyev going. And now's the time where you can tweak a little bit, but the last 2 weeks before the playoffs, you don't want to be tweaking a lot. You want to be starting to get in the groove, and that's your start now, actually. And at least a game every second night will at least for us fans and content creators, will feel like we're getting into more of a groove once again, too.
Yep. And schedule-wise, pretty easy week for the Canucks for being back-to-back games or every other night.
Yep.
Three teams that they should beat pretty handily most of the time, and the Kings, who they beat, was it a couple weeks ago in OT and then lost prior to that. So all at home should be a good week for the Canucks, but we will see.
Yeah, I just realized I'm going to drag myself here for the show Monday night after the most boring game again. I don't know why I subject myself to Canucks Kings games.
I'm not buying tickets to that one.
Yeah, you're going to have to keep me awake.
Hopefully it's better. Folks, thank you all for joining. Have a good night. We will see you next week.